At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to this very fun and freezing episode of Talking Cars, because Tommy, yesterday, me and you spent the day driving around in a blizzard.
I know, it's the end of October. We got, what do you think, 7 inches, 8 inches of snow?
Officially, we got 9 inches.
Wow, that's a lot of snow.
That's a lot of snow, and it was falling hard and fast, and we got thinking, what are the best new cars to drive through a blizzard? In other words, what are the best new snow cars? So what are we going to be talking about in this episode of Talking Cars, Tommy?
Well, we're going over some of the best new models out there for tackling the harshest winters. So we've got a variety of vehicles, from cars to SUVs to hatchbacks to station wagons, a little bit of everything. We even have a muscle car on here, so we're just going to go through the list and talk about all the cars that you may want to consider if you live, you know, in snowy Colorado or Montana or wherever.
Yeah, we try to pick the most unexpected ones, so hopefully we'll surprise you. So shall we roll the intro and get on with the show? Sit back and relax, or keep driving if you're driving. TFL Talking Cars is on the air, the world's most popular car podcast. Okay, maybe not yet, but we're working on it. All right, now to be fair, Tommy, we weren't driving around in a car yesterday, were we?
No, we had the 2020 Jeep Gladiator Rubicon, so we had plenty of ground clearance, plenty of tire.
It was a pickup truck.
It was a pickup truck, yeah, exactly. But
and let's face it, pickup trucks are good in the snow.
Yeah, but this is Talking Cars. You've got Talking Trucks with Andre.
Yeah, I know. So I'm just putting it out there. And the other thing I want to put out there right away is that any car or pickup truck with dedicated snow tires is going to be the best in the snow. So if you really want good snow vehicle, don't worry about, you know, the all-wheel drive or front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive, but just get yourself some proper snow tires, because those make the biggest difference.
Now, the first vehicle on our list is the brand new Subaru Outback. The Outback has been recently redone, but it's just as capable as ever in the snow. So standard all-wheel drive, symmetrical all-wheel drive, and 8.7 inches of ground clearance.
Yeah, there is like a couple things we were looking at when we were making this list, and let's talk about those, right? First and foremost, of course, is the all-wheel drive system. All these cars are all-wheel drive, you know, in my experience over the years, I've found that the system that allocates power to all four wheels all the time just works much better in the snow. You know, Audi started it with the Quattro system, and recently they've moved to more of a front-wheel drive bias system, which gives you better fuel economy. They have different ones, right? The Audi Quattro Ultra is what I'm talking about, if you want to get the real terminology. And basically what it is front-wheel drive, and then the engineers will tell you that in less than, you know, a heartbeat, it can switch to all-wheel drive. But I still like, I'm old school, when all the power is going to all four wheels all the time.
It's confusing, though, because even though Subaru markets it as symmetrical all-wheel drive, not all the Subaru all-wheel drive systems are the same. So, like, a WRX is going to have a fully different all-wheel drive system than, like, an Impreza or an Outback.
Yeah, and so let's talk about that in general before we get to the other criteria. You know, it's become very sophisticated in the way that cars allocate power to individual wheels, right? And it used to be that I remember my mom, your grandma, had a Honda Civic wagon that was actually all-wheel drive, and it was front-wheel drive. And then when the front wheel started to spin, it was a Halidic system, right? It would send power through a viscous coupling. Basically, there was this coupling that was well, viscous, and when the front wheel started to spin, it would harden up, and then that would send power to the rear wheels. And that had the fun side effect, which I enjoyed as a kid growing up, of making that back end all of a sudden lose traction as it was going around a corner, and it would spin the car completely into a 180, which is weird because you think a all-wheel drive car wouldn't do that. But yet it would. And there were a lot of systems like that, right? Because what happens is once you – it's basically snap oversteer, right? So once you lose traction, then the back end comes flying around. And by sending power to the rear wheels, that's exactly what happened. Those rear tires had traction, and then when they got power, they lost traction, and the car went flying around a corner. It was a lot of fun, Tommy.
A lot of the older systems were manually selectable. So the old Subaru systems were front-wheel drive, and then you push a button. Or you'd pull a little lever to make them four-wheel drive. But the new ones and the new all Outback are full-time all-wheel drive or symmetrical all-wheel drive. And basically that means that all four wheels are getting some amount of power all the time. And that is, like you said, a little preferable to what Subaru calls a slip-then-grip system, where, you know, one axle has to slip before the other axle gets power because it's immediate. There's no delay, even though Audi will tell you that the new systems are so sophisticated there's not much of a delay anyways.
Yeah, and then, of course, in a blizzard, the other thing you want is ground clearance, right? I remember we had a V70R Volvo, which was a very fun and fast station wagon. And I put snow tires on it. And the problem I ran into one year here in Colorado where we got a massive blizzard. I was trying to pick up your mom from work because she got stuck in the bus. The bus couldn't even make it through. It was basically so low that it was acting like a giant snowplow. And no matter how much grip you have, if you high center the car, in other words, if you beach it like a whale, right, because it's got so much snow underneath it that it can't, no matter with how much grip it has, actually get the power to the ground, you're also stuck. And that's what happened with that V70R, even with snow tires.
But the Outback has proper SUV levels of ground clearance. It's got X mode as well. Great car. I mean, we just drove the new one. It's a little bit slow, but it's got plenty of torque to get you up through the mountains. So strongly recommend looking at the new Outback if you want a crossover that doesn't look like one. So let's go to the next one because we have a ton of cars on this list.
Sure.
The Kia Telluride and its cousin vehicle, the Palisade.
Yeah, those are just good all-around cars. I actually got to take the Telluride off-road in Moab, and I can attest to the fact that it does have a pretty confident all-wheel drive system. Now, keep in mind, this is a big seven-passenger, well, relatively big. It's not like Expedition or Tahoe big seven-passenger vehicle. But in general, I was really amazed, at how it did in the Moab sand. And usually if it's good in sand, it's also good in snow. And then this is the other part that we should talk about, actually having a dedicated snow mode.
Yeah, honestly, that I don't think that the snow mode does much. I mean, on some vehicles, it just starts you out in second gear. Other vehicles, it will program the traction control to either be more or less aggressive, depending on the philosophy. But I think the snow mode is less important than by far the tires or the all-wheel drive system.
Well, it actually does help. Remember yesterday when we were driving the Gladiator? So the Gladiator has a lift on it, which gives you plenty of ground clearance. But we put mud terrains on it, which aren't snow rated, right? They don't have that little snowflake on them.
Yeah.
What would happen when you try to floor it too much? I mean, it's still had all-wheel drive, right? Or four-wheel drive, it's a truck. But what would happen?
It would just spin its tires.
Yeah, it would kind of stutter and just spin, and you wouldn't really get going. And you had to gently ease into the throttle, even with four-wheel drive, to get it to go. And that's really what traction control or snow mode does for you, right? It modulates the throttle in such a way that if the tires and wheels are spinning, it won't let you accelerate faster, which, in most instances is good, but there are some instances when that's not good.
I just don't like the snow mode because, I mean, even though it'll spin its tires and kind of get all jittery, I'd rather have the option for that to happen than be in snow mode and just have it be an absolute snail when you floor it. Like, that's more frustrating to me than having tires spin.
Or, what we saw yesterday was a lot of cars. There's a lot of hills in Boulder, so there were a lot of cars that could make it up the hill. And when you've got a traction control system like that in snow mode that's that invasive, you may end up experiencing, what I call the dead pedal, where you floor it and nothing happens. The car says, I don't have any traction, I don't have any grip, so I'm not going to spin the wheels, I'm just going to sit here and rev, and you're not going to move anywhere.
Well, hopefully that won't be an issue in the Telluride, because the Telluride is such a good SUV. I think it's best in class. It's better than the Palisade, even though it's a sister vehicle. It's much better than the Explorer. It's better than the Traverse. It feels like a premium car on the inside. Tons of room for your skis and for all your stuff to hit the slopes. And it looks great. They just knocked the design out of the ballpark.
Now, the other thing that we noticed yesterday, Tommy, before we get to the next car, was, you know, when you have a lot of snow, it starts to pack up into the wheel wells, right? And then at some point, it packs up so much that you lose, well, you lose any wheel travel up and down. And that's also not good, right? You don't want the snow packed so tightly around the tires that you lose your suspension.
It's not ideal.
And that's, you know, another thing that you want, something with a lot of ground clearance and a lot of articulation, because that won't happen. In that Gladiator, we didn't have that issue. You just couldn't. There's no way you could pack enough snow around the wheel well to actually get it to stick so hard that the wheel couldn't travel up and down.
But I think, to be honest, Dad, I mean, you can't expect the average consumer to want to drive a lifted Gladiator.
Right, right.
That gets just, but 16 also, miles to the gallon.
Well, we're talking about blizzards here, right? We're talking about extremes.
Yeah, but I think this has to be a car that not only works in the blizzard, but also works great every day. So that's kind of what we targeted on this list. So next up is the Mercedes-Benz.
Actually, I only targeted cars that work great in the blizzard.
Well, luckily for you out there, I targeted cars as well that work every day and don't aren't alarming when you take a freeway off-ramp at 70 miles an hour. So next up on our list is the Mercedes-Benz GLE. This is a luxury sedan by, of course, Mercedes. And the GLE has an optional air suspension system, which does this crazy little hop thing.
Yeah,
it'll get itself unstuck.
It's not meant for snow, but
it's
I'm
like
sure
sand.
But I'm sure it would work in deep snow. I remember when me and Nathan took two Wranglers into some really deep snow on the Switzerland Trail. I'm talking like maybe 3 feet of snow.
Yeah.
At some point, you do actually need that feature, and that is a feature to be able to raise the vehicle up and over the snow. So air suspension is a big deal when it comes to snowworthiness, just because it makes it less likely to get high-centered.
Although I will say, Dad, that in some cases, people in the really cold weather don't like air suspension because it can freeze.
Yeah, what happens is air suspension, of course, uses air to lift the shocks up – well, not the shocks, the vehicle up and down. And that air can have moisture in it. In places like Canada, that moisture will freeze inside the air suspension, and then you're kind of – well, you're without any suspension.
But the GLE uses the latest 4MATIC system by Mercedes. Really good. Of course, make sure you have 4MATIC equipped on your GLE. But I think it looks great. The AMG one is not ideal because it's got steamroller tires.
Yeah, if you got any sports car, is going to be problematic just because the tires are very wide and it's going to be expensive to get snow tires. And asymmetrical tires are also problematic. And that means basically, like if you have a car that's got smaller tires in the front than on the back, it's not good. Hard to get snow tires, pain in the butt. And speaking of the GLE, Tommy, there are two other features that it has that are ideal for the Blizzard. You know what those are?
Heated seats and heated steering wheel.
Exactly right.
Yes, for sure. So very comfortable interior on the GLE. Really well equipped. I love the dual screens. Also has a lot of space, so if you're going on ski trips, it's great. I like it a little bit more than the X5, actually. I think it's just a little bit more suited for rough terrain. It even has off-road modes if you so desire.
Yeah, certainly more ground clearance with that air suspension.
All right, next up is a traditional SUV. It is the Toyota 4Runner.
Yeah, the 4Runner is obviously a beast on and off-road. It is a vehicle that I would not be afraid to take into the worst of blizzards. My only problem with that is that it's selectable four-wheel drive, right? And so you actually have to select it.
Yeah, so it defaults in two-wheel drive, and then you move a lever back to lock it in a four-wheel drive on slippery situations. And the advantage is when you're in four-wheel drive, it's going to distribute the torque 50-50 front and back all the time. The disadvantage of that is, well, if you forget to select four-wheel drive and you just like hop in and drive it in two-wheel drive, there's a good chance that you could spin out or get stuck on a hill. As we saw this morning, someone forgot four-wheel drive in their new 4Runner and ended up sliding backwards down a hill.
Hey, can I do a rant, Tommy?
Do we have time for a rant,
Ben? We have time for a rant, yeah.
Okay.
Right, here's Roman's rant. So we're in Boulder, Colorado, where is the home of the University of Colorado, right? And so we get a lot of people who come here from places like Texas, Hawaii comes to mind, even Arizona, mainly students. And guys, here's Roman's rant. If you've never driven in snow and you don't know how to drive in snow, a blizzard is not the best time to learn. We had whiteout blizzard conditions yesterday, and this is not what you want to do. Driving down a four-lane road with your blinkers on in the middle of the two lanes at 10 miles an hour is not going to endear you to the locals who actually know how to drive in snow. It was very frustrating to see all these people with their noses glued to their front windshield. By the way, that's not going to make it any better either. You know, leaning forward doesn't make you any more apt to drive in snow. So I would suggest for all you non-snowy types, if you don't know how to drive in snow, do not go out and get a Starbucks in the middle of a snowstorm if you've never driven in snow, because it's really frustrating. And, you know, the rules of the road still apply even in the snowstorm. So stay in your lane, stop for stoplights, try to do, you know, a reasonable speed. If the speed limit is, let's say, 35, 5 miles an hour is not a reasonable speed. At that point, you're probably just better off, you know, not going and getting that Starbucks. It was a Sunday afternoon. You didn't have to go to work, and yet there were tons of people out there who were just gnarling up traffic, you know, because they didn't know how to drive in snow.
Good rant.
All right, there you go.
All right.
What's next?
So beyond the Forerunner, we should talk about the other Toyota products. If you can afford it, the Land Cruiser is kind of the ultimate snow vehicle because that has a full-time four-wheel drive system, and it's just an absolute beast. But we also wanted to give some honorable mentions to the Camry all-wheel drive and the Prius all-wheel drive.
Yeah, and I think once we're talking about these kinds of vehicles, we're also picking vehicles that necessarily are unique in class, right? So the Prius is one of the few hybrids that actually does have all-wheel drive, right? Most hybrids don't have all-wheel drive.
Well, it's
their front-wheel drive.
It's one of the few hybrid cars.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of hybrid SUVs that have it.
Yeah, like the RAV4.
Right, but when it comes to hybrid cars, now, big disclaimer about the hybrid all-wheel drive systems that Toyota uses.
On the Prius and even on the Camry.
No, the Camry's different. On the Prius, on the RAV4 hybrid, on the Lexus RX hybrid, on the Lexus UX hybrid, things like that. What they do is it's a front-wheel drive is driven by a gasoline engine and the electric motor. And then the rear axle is only driven by an electric motor. But the issue is typically the motor on the rear axle is a little bit weeny for a really snowy environment. So on the Prius, it's only 7 horsepower. And on the slip test that they do, it did not have enough torque to get us unstuck. Now, the Camry's different because the Camry is just a standard gas engine. There's no Camry hybrid all-wheel drive. So on the Camry gas all-wheel drive, it's just more of a traditional all-wheel drive system.
Right, but like even with the Camry, you can't get the big V6 with the all-wheel drive.
Well, they make you get the little baby engine.
Yeah, exactly. And then that Prius engine, I think it's only good to a certain speed. It cuts out after, like, I forget what the speed is, but it doesn't work, I don't think, on highway speeds, Tommy.
It's like a little traction motor, so It works up to, I think, 40 miles an hour just to get you out of, like, a ditch or out of a tricky situation. I'd love to try it in the snow. Steve tried it in the snow, and it was all right, but it wasn't brilliant.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Better than nothing. Okay, so the next vehicle on our list is the only muscle car that we're going to discuss. It's the Dodge Challenger and the Dodge Charger GT.
Yeah, how about that? A muscle car with all-wheel drive and a lifted all-wheel drive muscle car at that.
It's got a slight lift over the standard Challenger, only available in the V6, though, which is definitely frustrating.
Yeah, it's a car that almost killed Andre, do you remember?
Yeah, so Andre was on the drive program in a big snowstorm in the Challenger GT.
In Canada,
yeah, and a giant tree limb fell off and just destroyed the windshield.
Yeah, and almost, you know, fell into Andre's lap. So we have a lot of good memories with that car, but it is cool that we actually have a muscle car. So if you want a muscle car, well, it's not really a muscle car, right? A V6 Pentastar doesn't count. I mean, so you've got the muscle car, but not the muscle car power plant.
It's over 300 horsepower, though.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
back
okay.
in the day, that would have been pretty serious.
Yeah.
I think it's a great car. I really enjoy driving it. Plus, you can get it with all these cool colors and cool packages, and you can make it look like a proper Hellcat, actually, or like an RT. I mean, you see them on the road sometimes, and you're like, wow, is that a Hellcat? And then you look on the side, and it says GT. And you're like, holy cow, that's the lifted all-wheel drive model. So it's a cool, really cool option package.
Yeah, and it's unusual, and they don't sell a lot of them. So I think it's going to be as collectible as a Hellcat one day.
Ooh, you think so?
I think so. It's pretty badass.
All right. I don't know about that, but it is a cool vehicle. We had one in bright orange once, and I loved it. I really liked that vehicle. So next up on our list is the only electric car we're discussing, so we can put an electric car on the list. It is the Tesla Model X.
Well, we're also going to talk about the I-Pace because that also has an off-road snow mode.
So the Model X and the I-Pace both have air suspension, and they both can lift themselves up. The great thing about electric vehicles is they have a motor on the front and a motor on the rear. So we've been talking a lot about, like, mechanical linkages and, you know, how do they work. Well, on these electric vehicles, the computer decides when to send power to what wheel, or what axle, I should say, and then it just happens immediately. There's no delay. There's no viscous or clutch pack that has to engage. It just happens via electricity.
If I remember right, the I-Pace has the snow mode, and then the Tesla has the slip mode, right? Which is basically the same thing.
I think the slip mode is like if you're stuck in a ditch and the traction control is cutting power,
yeah.
You like click the little button and then it'll let you spin up. And maybe that'll help you get unstuck. And then the I-Pace also is adjustable air suspension. The only thing about the EVs is they do have powerful motors, but they definitely lose some range when it gets very cold.
And we'd love to include an e-tron on this list, but I actually drove it. But we've never had it actually at the office to test. So I had it for one day and I drove it from San Francisco area to Tahoe, which was fine, but you know we really need to spend a week with it. It's actually supposed to be good off-road, and yet we don't know. So Audi, if you're listening, we'd love to get one and test it in the snow, test it off-road. You know, it's an advantage that you guys have you're not playing up, especially up here for the colder climate. So please send us one.
All right, so talked about EVs, back to more traditional vehicles. I love this next one. It's a highly underrated car. It is the Honda Passport, which is basically a stubby Pilot, if you're wondering. Now, the Honda Passport uses an all-wheel drive system called IVTM4, and it's just incredible. It's probably the best traditional all-wheel drive system on this list. I've run it through my slip test, the rollers, and it passes with flying colors. Good torque out of a naturally aspirated V6. And I like it more than the Pilot just because it's a little bit smaller and a little bit lighter.
Yeah, if you guys are new to TFL, check out some of Tommy's slip tests on our either Car or Now channel. Where have we been putting them? Have we been on Car or Now?
They're kind of all over.
Yeah, we'll find a place. Probably end up on off-road. Basically, we put the car on rollers, and we see if it can get off those rollers, you know, using two wheels or three wheels or one wheel. And it simulates in a controlled manner snow and slippery conditions. And so, you know, when we're talking about these vehicles, we've actually tested them, and we're not just kind of, you know, spitballing it, but we actually know which ones have done well on the slip test and which ones haven't.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not an exact replication of getting stuck on ice, but it's the best I can do when it's not in the middle of December.
And to be fair, the one that was the worst we've ever done is the Prius all-wheel drive.
It really got stuck. And the Lexus UX hybrid, which also is the same, very similar system.
Yeah.
But the Passport is a great car. It's not terribly fuel efficient, not terribly sporty, but there's some people on YouTube that really take them into deep stuff off-road as well. So, yeah, I'd look into that.
Yeah, and also has a snow mode. You know, it's, like I say, I'm not a huge fan of these traction control systems, but when I think of like our loved ones driving a vehicle that has it, it makes me feel more comfortable because it's not something that you actually actively have to like take a lever and engage it or flip a switch, right?
It's just ready to go.
It's just ready to go, yeah.
Right. All right. Any guesses what's next, Dad?
Is it the Mazda Miata, Tommy?
It is not the Mazda Miata. It's the one you wanted on this list. It's the Lexus GX.
Yeah, the Lexus GX and the LX, of course, are the two big Lexus crossovers, and they're built traditional chassis on frame trucks, and so, you know, they're really good because they have all those things that you want that we talked about at the beginning of this show, right? So they have ground clearance, they have a lot of kind of standard four-wheel drive systems that just basically they're trucks.
Yeah, and the GX also is a standard full-time four-wheel drive with a center differential. So it's always sending at least some power to all four wheels, and then I think you can lock it up in the GX as well. But very comfortable, ancient. It's really old. They just actually updated it, facelifted it, but you can definitely feel some of the truck-like characteristics coming through.
And the other thing, and this is also applies to all the big crossovers and SUVs, and these are the big boys, not necessarily like the Telluride or the other smaller ones, you sit up tall, right? Visibility is great. So in a snowstorm, especially a blizzard, you want to be able to see over that little Civic that we saw yesterday that could not make it up the hill, so you can go around it. Or if you want, you can stop and help them.
That's the idea.
That's the idea, which makes you feel like a hero.
All right, ready for the next one?
And let's talk about the other thing, which we noticed yesterday, right? Let's say, you know, we actually stopped and saw a little Honda Civic that was stuck going up the hill. Luckily, he was able to back down it. But we had our Gladiator with the winch, and we were thinking we should help this guy. And then we realized something that is actually true in a lot of modern vehicles.
Well, yeah, most modern cars especially, and actually the vast majority of crossovers and SUVs no longer have tow points. So like old cars, they always have hooks on them or loops or something to recover if you get stuck. So we have a number of old cars, and they all, even the like my Mini, my classic Mini, which is the least snowworthy car you can think of, has two in the front and one in the back. And if you get stuck in an old vehicle, you always have those concrete solid points to get towed by.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't have recovery points on modern vehicles. You know, they have those little eyelets that you screw in, but those are not meant to be used to, like, tow a vehicle. They're meant for, like, transportation when they put them on their roll-on-roll. They're called ro-ro boats, right? Roll-on, roll-off boats, and they transport them from, like, Europe to here or Japan from here. Those are the points that they use to hold the car down, but they're not meant for recovery. And even if you did try to use them at the recovery point, which we have in emergencies, those eyelets are really tiny. So you, like in the Jeep, it's a big hook, right? And there's no way you could actually hook it to that.
Well, the pickle is, like, so you just got stuck in a snowbank, which is pretty common. You know, then you have to go around to the bumper, and the bumper's going to be covered in ice. You got to scrape off that little inspection port. You have to get a screwdriver or something pointy, and you have to work your way into that little port. And then you have to open up the trunk and go underneath all your things into the very base of the trunk where you might find the eyelet. And then you're freezing, you're trying to screw this thing in. The little hole is packed with snow. It's just a disaster. Yeah, I think all vehicles need a tow point.
And you can't put it around like a suspension member because you'll yank that off before you actually pull the car out. Right. Same thing with the front. The nice thing is when you're looking at like these bigger trucks, they do have recovery points. And, you know, I'm thinking like especially like Land Rovers, Range Rovers. Right. Not only do they have recovery points, which is cool, but they also have one other thing that I think is unique to those. And what is that? Which we had a huge problem with yesterday. Another thing to have in a blizzard.
Windshield wipers at work?
No, a heated windshield. Right? Land Rovers and Range Rovers have these little wires. Some of them have these little wires. And they can be annoying when you're not in a blizzard. That actually heat up the windshield and keep it from freezing up. Now, the Gladiator had a horrible problem with that. It has a little tiny vent that's centered. And then it has holes on either side of that vent, you know, on the passenger and driver's side. But no air comes out of it. So it really doesn't even warm up the screen. And then, of course, the wipers and the windshield get clogged with ice. And then very quickly, you can't see. And by the way, those, I'm going to call European-style kind of squeegee wipers are horrible in the snow. I mean, they just become covered in ice. Filled, and what you're doing is you're trying to wipe ice with ice, and that is never good.
The only thing I don't like about – well, there's a couple things I don't like about the heated windshield is you can see the little filaments.
The squiggly lines, yeah.
Like you said, but they're so expensive to replace.
Yeah, like a normal windshield – we use not rocks, but little pebbles in Colorado to give grip during snowstorms. And then those things, of course, get thrown up in the summer. And it's not uncommon for you to have a broken windshield here once a year. It's pretty much standard.
If not more.
Some
people get it in the wintertime once a month.
We have to either fix those things or replace windshields on a constantly, basically. And a regular windshield, like I remember our F-150 Raptor, right? That was on the expensive side. That was like $450. A less expensive car might be like $250.
Yeah.
Range Rover heated, $1,500.
I know. It's crazy. And you don't even have to crack it all the way. Like, I think a good-sized rock chip that you could fill would be enough to take out the heating portion of it.
Yeah, and in Colorado, it's actually illegal to drive with one of those massive cracks running down the windshield. So if it's connected at two points, you're automatically in trouble.
Exactly.
I mean, what I mean by two points is like if the line runs from, you know, one of the corners or lines of the windshield to the other. You see what I'm saying?
Yep, I know what you're saying. And in Jeeps, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
It's very frequent. Speaking of Jeeps, that's our next vehicle.
Is it?
It's the Jeep Wrangler. And the reason the Wrangler's on here is not because it's got a great heated steering wheel.
A two-wheel drive one?
No, that was a very limited thing.
Did you guys know that they actually made a two-wheel drive Wrangler for a while?
In 2007 and 2008, they did.
It's crazy.
But the new Wrangler has something kind of unusual. It's got something called Select Track as an option. And this is an advantage over the Forerunner. Select Track is actually a full-time system. So most Wranglers have two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive. And Select Track, it's an auto function. So you just put it in auto, and then the vehicle will decide when it needs to be in two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive. It's much easier, and it involves much less thought. So that's why we decided to include it. But, of course, the soft top and the doorless thing can be a pickle in the cold.
Yeah, but once again, great ground clearance, a lot of room for suspension to travel up and down. It's not going to get clogged up with snow. And you're going to get good, you know, I think even snow-rated tires with that thing.
Really good heated steering wheels, too.
Yeah, incredible. FCA has some of the best heated. So the Germans, I think, Tommy, do the best heated seats. Remember we had that little Mini that you used to have, the convertible? If you turn that on within like 22 seconds, your butt would be so hot.
I know, you couldn't sit in it.
That you'd be ready for, you know, a cold shower. It was incredible.
So, Wrangler, everyone yep. knows what the Wrangler is, but the next one's a bit of a surprise, and I put it on here because I just drove it and I was really impressed by it. It's the little Chevrolet Trailblazer. So the old Trailblazer was this monstrous thing with a big straight six, and it was body on frame, and it was, you know, proper American truck. The new Trailblazer is this little itty-bitty SUV that's built in Korea. It's powered by a three-cylinder engine, but it is surprisingly good. So I just drove the active trim with the all-wheel drive system, and it was super responsive. I took it off-road. It was amazingly good at distributing power to the wheel with traction. Just loved it. Tons of space on the inside. Not a bad-looking little thing, too. I think it looks kind of like an aggressive hedgehog. And it's cheap. It's affordable.
Yeah, most journalists hate that thing because they basically took a cool name, Blazer, and turned it into a little tiny crossover. Right? A Blazer was a proper V8-powered, body-on-frame truck. Sunday. And now it's this little tiny crossover thingy. But I didn't have a chance to drive it, Tommy, so I'll take your word for it.
I loved it. Yeah, no one's going to believe me out there, but the little Blazer was a lot of fun, especially when the going gets rough.
All right, so let's talk about front. So I think we can agree that all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, depending on, you know, whether you got a truck or a car, is better than front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive.
Yes.
But in the snow, what would you rather have? Let's say you couldn't get all-wheel drive. Would you rather have a front-wheel drive car or a rear-wheel drive?
Regardless of snow tires or not?
Right. Let's put them on all seasons.
I think front-wheel drive is easier.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you don't have as much rear-end movement.
Right, you don't – like with rear-wheel drive, on icy conditions, you can turn the wheel and still keep going straight. Whereas with front-wheel drive, you turn the wheel, and even if it slips, the wheels are still, you know, trying to give you the direction that you're pointing them versus having the vehicle go straight.
I think on a typical car, too, they're mostly nose-heavy, so you have more weight over the drive wheels. So that's why I would choose front-wheel drive.
How about rear-wheel drive with snow tires versus front-wheel drive with all seasons?
Oh, rear-wheel drive with snow tires. Mm. Yeah, snow tires are the – if you're looking at making your car better off-road – or better, sorry, out in the snow, the number one thing you should do is not go out and buy a new car. It's to buy a good set of snow tires, and you'll be amazed. Because if you buy a new car, it's going to have all seasons, and it's only going to be marginally better than the car you're replacing, most likely.
Yeah, and speaking of tires, we just did a podcast, if you want to check it out, with Pirelli regarding the new all-weather tires, which are actually snow-rated. They have the snowflake all-weather tires. They're different than all-season tires. And our friends at Michelin just sent us some.
So we're going to try them out on our Model Y or Tesla.
Yeah, we're going to try them out on our Model Y and see if they actually are better than all seasons and as good as snow tires. So I can't wait to actually put them on. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing that. And we'll see how an electric car does with all-weather tires.
Right. So the next car on our list is a car you wanted. I'm not really sure why it's on our list because I'm not a huge fan of it. But you love it. It's the Volvo V90 Cross Country.
Yeah, I took it off-road. Along with the, I think it's a V60 cross country. And there's just something about station wagons, and this could be my bias. There's just something about lifted station wagons with cladding on them that makes them seem like they'd be good in the snow. The V90, the V70R that we had was actually, even with snow tires, not great in the snow. It had a Halidex front wheel drive system that would send power to the rear wheel drives when, you know, you lost traction, which is not great. And the other thing that's not great is a lot of horsepower in snow. So that thing had 300 horsepower, and it doesn't really help you. You know, a TRX is not going to do you any good in the snow because that 702 horsepower will never be put down to the ground. But I just think Volvos and snow go together, and I have no proof for that except for the fact that they come from Sweden. I know they're Chinese owned now, but you know, I figure the Swedes spend a lot of time in the snow, so they spend a lot of time engineering things that do well in the snow.
My issue with I like the V90. I love station wagons, but the new V90. Especially the cross country, you know, the old cross country was significantly different than the standard wagon. In the V90 cross country, I mean, it's the cross country gives you some cladding, but you don't get that much more ground clearance. Same thing with the all-road, the A4 all-road, right? You get a little bit more ground clearance and then some black plastic on it. And I just don't think that's enough advantage over a standard V90 for the extra cost.
Yeah, I was actually on a show with the CEO, the U.S. CEO of Volvo, and I asked him if they had any plans to make a more kind of overlandy Volvo, and he said absolutely not.
Yes, it's not in their DNA.
Yeah, it's not in their DNA. And the same thing with Audi. You know, once upon a time, Audi, I think, had the lead for all-wheel drive, and then all-wheel drive became kind of a symbol or synonymous with luxury. And, of course, BMW came along with their xDrive, and then Mercedes did theirs. And then, of course, it moved down the kind of the food chain to all the other manufacturers. So now, like Volkswagen has 4Motion, right? And it doesn't really give you an advantage just to have all-wheel drive. That's why we're talking about all these other factors that actually make for a good Blizzard car.
So this is kind of an odd choice, but it is the next car on our list because it's very unusual. It's the Mazda 3 with the iActive all-wheel drive. There's a ton of vehicles we could have put on this list, like the Crosstrek and, you know, like the Volkswagen, the new upcoming Taos, but they're really crossovers. The Mazda 3 is interesting because it's a true sedan and hatchback, right? It's a proper car. It's not some lifted thing. And it actually has all-wheel drive. So if you look at the Mazda 3 competitive set, think like Volkswagen Golf, right? Maybe Corolla hatchback. None of them are available with all-wheel drive, but the little Mazda is, and I love that they have that as an option.
Yeah, and you know, when we were putting this list together, we spent a lot of time trying to come up with like a sports car that's good in the snow, in a blizzard, right? And we thought of vehicles like the Audi R8, the Porsche C4, Carrera 4, right? These are sports cars with all-wheel drive systems. But the problem with all of them is they just don't have enough ground clearance. They have really wide tires, and they have way too much power. So I really had a hard time coming up. Maybe you guys could listen in the comments below. What do you think is actually the best sports car to drive in a blizzard? And once upon a time when I was younger, I had this like image of, before I actually had the chance, you know, we're very blessed that we get to, I've driven every probably car, new car and truck that's available in America over the last 10 years.
We're not doing so hot on our Ferraris, though.
Yeah, we're not, okay, forget the Ferraris. I haven't driven some of the Ferraris and some Lamborghinis, but you know, the stuff that you guys drive. Maybe you guys drive Ferraris and Lamborghinis. But I had this dream of like having a car that could do it all, right? My dream car for a long time was like a C4 Porsche 911, right?
Yep.
And the problem is it'll never do it all. It's just not, you know, any clapped out Toyota 20-year-old Tundra will do better in the snow than any, you know, German engineered C4 will ever do. And that's just the way it is. It's just not designed for snow. You know, it could make it drivable in the snow. You could actually maybe use it, but it's never going to be stellar.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's sad,
even with snow tires.
That's sad. I like the idea that there is that one perfect car out there. You just got to find it.
So, well, let us know in the comments below, or you tell me, what's a perfect snow, blizzard, you know, Icemageddon sports car?
I think you could make a Carrera 4 work.
Yeah.
I think if you are...
I think it's also very expensive if you happen to crash into like a curb.
But what about an old one? What about like...
It's also very expensive.
997, $36,000 or $30,000?
It's also very expensive.
Maybe the Mazda 3 hatchback is the one for you, Dad. It's okay. Fun to drive. You know, not that expensive when you smudge it into a curve.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Okay. All right.
All right. So next up on our list, we have some kind of honorable mentions.
Yep.
The Nissan Altima. And the Altima is on this list because it, like the Camry, is now available in all-wheel drive.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, the Fusion was all-wheel drive. That was one that was available. And, of course, the Legacy is all-wheel drive in that full-size segment.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mid-size? Is it mid-size?
Mid-size, yeah.
I think Maxima's full-size. I think Maxima's available in all-wheel drive, too.
I don't think so.
Let me check here. I'm on the Nissan website.
All right, why don't you check? I can tell you what is available in all-wheel. It used to be the 300 used to be available. That's
The Chrysler?
The Chrysler, yeah.
Yeah, that was full-size.
That was full-size, yeah.
Charger is still available.
Yeah.
In all-wheel drive.
Yep. That's another full-size one.
All right, here we go. Maxima.
I don't think so, dude.
Let me see.
I think it's CVT front-wheel drive. Yeah, any luck?
Xtronic CVT.
Yeah.
Xtronic CVT. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it is only front wheel drive.
Yeah, it looks cool. It looks like it should be, you know, a bat out of hell, but unfortunately, it's kind of handicapped with the CVT for us. Really sporty vehicle.
It might be, actually. Anyways, let us know in the comment section below. 2020, well, the Nissan Maxima is still not available in all wheel drive. There you go.
Sometimes Dad knows.
There you go. Of course you know. You always know. So next up on our list is the M5.
Yeah, we put that on the list because for the first time, that might be your sports car. It's not really a sports car; it's a four-door sedan. But damn, it'll chew and eat and spit out sports cars for lunch all day long. And for the first time in this generation, it's available in all-wheel drive. And it's available in all-wheel drive that you can actually disengage the all-wheel drive and make a two-wheel drive.
Yeah, isn't
so
that
you
crazy?
You could do burnouts or you could, you know, have all-weather traction. The other one that's like that is AMG.
Mercedes.
The wagon is the same thing. You could also get an all-wheel drive. But these are, once again, they're kind of the sports car problem, let's call it, where, you know, all-wheel drive is tuned and meant for performance and not for all-weather use.
Yeah, I think it's significantly rear biased, but maybe there's a snow mode. I've never driven the new M5. I was out of town when we had it. But the other thing too is the new M3. So we just saw the M3 that's got the frightening face on it. The new M3 is going to be available in all wheel drive too, so you can get it in rear wheel drive or all wheel drive. So the M brand is now moving into the 21st century with their ability to launch in all sorts of conditions.
And I know for all you folks, if you're actually listening to this and you live in Florida or Arizona or someplace like California where we don't get snow, you know, the same thing applies to like standing water, right?
Right.
Because it's very similar in a lot of ways. So while, you know, on drive pavement, these vehicles may not give you any additional capability, certainly in that torrential hurricane that you get a lot of in Florida, they certainly are good.
Okay, I have an honorable dismention,
okay.
too.
What? The car that's horrible in the snow?
Dishonorable okay. disappointment.
All right, what's that?
So if you look at the world of crossover, it's obviously very hot.
Yep.
And then everyone was making, you know, the small crossover. And then everyone decided, you know, let's electrify the RAV4 and CR-V. Now everyone's making a hybrid crossover like the Escape. And now we see the plug-in hybrid crossover. And Toyota came in there with the RAV4 Prime, 300 horsepower, 0 to 60 in under 6 seconds, you know, 42 miles of range, just came out of the gate swinging, standard all-wheel drive. And then Ford comes out with this dinky thing, which is the Escape plug-in hybrid, which is a little bit cheaper. It's got like 100 less horsepower, and it's front-wheel drive only.
Yeah, that's
what
weird.
In the heck?
That's weird. And the other one, of course, that's built on that same chassis is the new Bronco Sport. Not the real Bronco, but the Sport. And we haven't tested that, and, you know, with the way things are going with Ford, we may not. So, you know, what we're trying to do is talk about cars that we've actually driven and gotten behind the wheel of, not just stuff that we've, you know, read about or heard about or reported on.
But regardless, I'm so disappointed in the Escape plug-in hybrid
because
I was really hoping for
the battery is tiny. Right.
It's actually, I think the range is the same, if not better, than the RAV4 Prime. It's really good range.
Is it? I thought it was a tiny battery.
No, it's pretty good.
How many kilowatt hours?
Plug-in hybrid range, I'll tell you. It can go 37 miles.
So that's about the same.
It's about the same. It's a little bit less, actually, because I think the RAV4 can do like 42.
Yeah.
But front-wheel drive only, it's slow compared to the RAV4. I say, what the heck? Come on, Ford, you can do better than that.
Right. Are there other car companies that we have forgotten to mention? So I think we've talked about most of them. I'm kind of going through my mind if there's any other vehicles that I would love to have in a snowstorm. And I got to tell you, Tommy, as you know, this is talking cars, but in a snowstorm, like once again, I would take a truck all day long, as long as it's all-wheel drive and it's one of the off-roady ones.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I agree with you because I seem to have more scary experiences in trucks in the snow than in cars.
Yeah, because here's the thing. That's actually a really good point, right? Going is only half the battle, and all the stuff we're talking about is not going to help you stopping, right?
So, right.
You know, getting yourself moving in the snow is one thing. Coming to a stop is a completely different thing, and that – of course, it has to do with ABS, which now all cars have to have.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has to do with the tire choice. And the snow tires are going to be really the key to that.
Well, I think it has to do with weight, too. And pickup trucks are just obscenely heavy compared
to you get a lot more momentum going forward.
Yeah, you got a lot of mass moving. And then the other thing about pickup trucks is they don't have weight over the rear. So even in four-wheel drive, that Gladiator is really tail-happy compared to a Wrangler.
It's true.
So I think I like trucks. I definitely think, you know, they're definitely more capable out of the box because they have most of them have low ranges and pretty good tires. But I think I'd prefer a crossover with snows or something like that.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times we've seen like beach turtles, you know, big crossovers and trucks in the ditch because the people forgot that they are much easier to move ahead, they're much harder to stop. So it's a really good point.
And the little Mini is wee easy to get unstuck. You just give it a little shove. Getting a full-size Silverado out of a snowbank is going to take some pretty serious muscle.
Yeah, and then keep in mind, guys, you know, once again, it's all about tire choice. If you really want a good tire that works in the snow, it will not probably work for the most part in the summer because it's about compound. I think the magic number there, I think, is 44 degrees. So that's the point at which snow tires come into their own. And you got to have that little snowflake on the side of your tire. All seasons don't have that snowflakes. And it's not about necessarily the sipes or the little teeth in the tire as much as it is about the compound. Because on a regular tire, the compound's much harder, I believe. And it, when it gets cold, it just becomes super hard, like an hockey puck, right? And it loses all the grip. And then there are, of course, many kinds of snow tires. And I'm talking about, like, the modern ones. Like, I think Blizzak would be one that you'd be very familiar with, right? But there are also old-school snow tires that are studdable. In Colorado, we allow studs. And regular snow tires like those Blizzaks work well, but when you're on sheer ice, then you probably need studs. But that's a whole different conversation. I think on sheer ice, I'll tell you one more story. Can I tell you one more story?
Sure.
Yeah, I took a Bentley up ice racing, and it had Blizzaks on it, all-wheel drive, 600 horsepower. Didn't do well.
Yeah, it was useless. It was like it would do like 10 miles an hour on the ice.
Yeah, and when it would go, you couldn't turn it.
Yeah, the only people moving had proper like half-inch studs on that ice.
Yeah, and I think those were like people like actually like put screws.
I don't think many people are driving their new Bentleys on sheer ice lakes. So
no. And hey, speaking of that, what convertibles? Here's a question for you guys. I'm going to throw out one, and then let's see if you guys can add two more. What convertibles can you buy that come in all-wheel drive? So there's only a handful of them. So we actually own one of them, right? That's the one I'm going to give you. That's an easy one.
The TT.
Yep. That's back in the day, that was one of the only convertibles you could actually buy that had all-wheel drive.
Isn't it dying?
The TT, I don't think it's dying.
I thought the TT was going away.
I don't think it's dying. But what? In the comments below, let us know what other convertibles, and there are two that I'm thinking of. One is gone, but it was, you know, a really weird thing, but it was an all-wheel drive, and one is actually, I think, still being produced. And I'll give you a hint. They're both crossovers. Let's leave it at that.
Those are both dead.
Well, let's leave it at that. Leave it at that.
No, I think they're both dead. I think there's more than you think.
Okay.
And I think you're going to have to look at Bavaria for some of it.
Yeah, a lot of modern Germans now do like X-Drive. I know you're also giving a hint, but let us know. There aren't that many. Like, okay. Maybe there's like five.
And then what about the supercars, like the Aventador?
No, supercars. Okay. I'm not counting supercars, Koenigseggs, or Aventadors, or, you know, let's keep those out of the conversation.
All right. Okay, sounds
all right.
Good.
All right, Tommy, before we go, one last question for you. All right, what vehicle would you choose? And actually, we forgot one vehicle, a G-Wagon. That's also very good.
That's priced like a supercar.
Right, all right.
That's
so
crazy.
So if you were, you know, driving to Alaska and you knew you were going to be stuck in a snowstorm or a blizzard, what vehicle would you take?
I'm looking at my little Land Cruiser.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You do the Land Cruiser.
Just because I know it'll always start in that snowstorm. It's really heavy.
Yeah.
It's not the best snow vehicle, but in terms of getting you home, the Land Cruiser would be the one to do it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think which one I would choose. It's going to have ground clearance. You know, I would probably, I know this is talking, could it be a truck or has to be a car?
Has to be a car.
G-Wagon?
Sure.
Okay.
Just do the G-Wagon. That works.
All right. Well, guys, thank you for spending another, few minutes with us. As always, this is Roman.
Yep, and Tommy, check out TFLcar and TFLtruck.com.
For more news, views, and of course, Snowbageddon, best cars, reviews. See you guys next time. Ciao.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, You're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.